against recycling laws and outlawed disposal in landfills, but some recyclers send our high-tech trash to other countries not necessarily equipped to properly handle the waste. On this Earth Day, we take a closer look at the problem and what's being done to address it. Jim Puckett is executive director of the Basel Action Network, BAN, an environmental watchdog group that works to keep toxic waste out of the environment. And he joins us from the capital of tree huggers, Seattle, Washington. Welcome, Jim. Nice to have you with us.
Good morning.
Good morning. Brett Reinhart is vice president of eCycle Secure, a Charlotte-based electronics recycling firm specializing in certified digital data destruction and IT asset disposition, which we'll talk about. Mr. Reinhart has also been a member of the board of directors of the Mecklenburg County Solid Waste Advisory Board and the Carolina Recycling Association. Thank you for joining us as well.
Good morning, Mike.
Good morning. And Shannon Binns is executive director and founder of Sustain Charlotte. That's an organization working to inspire choices that lead to a healthier community. Welcome back to the program.
Thanks. Happy Earth Day.
Thank you. Before we get too deeply into this conversation about e-waste and recycling e-waste, what is so toxic about these electronic products that we bring into our homes and use close up every single day? What's in them that's bad for the environment, and why is it bad for the environment?
Well, this is Brett, and as you use these materials, they sit on your laps, they sit on your desk, your kids play with them. They're perfectly safe. Like so many things that we have in our lives, used the way they're intended to be used, absolutely no problems. The problem comes up when they are not disposed of properly, when they don't go where they're supposed to go. You've got a tremendous amount of lead in the old CRT televisions and monitors. Those are the glass picture tube ones. You've got lead solder on most of the circuit boards in the electronics. They're trending away from that a little bit now, but most of what's still in the marketplace has got lead on the solder. There's chemicals and flame retardants in the plastics. There's a variety of chemistries in the batteries and all of the electronics that we use. There's mercury in the fluorescent lamps. Now, we all think of the fluorescent lamps overhead, but most of your laptop screens, LCD televisions, have all got fluorescent tubes that have mercury in them.
Wow.
And, of course, there's a litany of other items, but that's the short list.
Now, I know that we've gone greener and greener over the years, and Shannon, people like you are partially responsible for that, but on a large scale, because it's not just about electronics, but we've been throwing a lot of nasty stuff into landfills for years. Old tires, car batteries, whole cars in some cases have found their way to landfills. Is e-waste substantially worse than all that other nasty stuff we've been throwing away?
Well, I think one of the problems with e-waste is it's the fastest growing part of our waste stream.
Mm-hmm.
You know, right now we're generating worldwide about, got it somewhere in my notes, 20 to 50 million tons of e-waste generated every year. And that amount has been growing substantially each year, and it's expected to grow 8% per year indefinitely at this point.
Wow.
So that's part of why e-waste is such a problem.
So, Jim, when I take my old computer or my old television or my old smartphone and I just toss it in the trash and it gets picked up by the garbage truck and hauled off to the landfill, what happens to it when it gets into that landfill? What's the process of the toxic chemicals, heavy metals, et cetera, leaching out?
Yeah, exactly. They will leach, and it takes time sometimes. For example, the glass that has lead in it will take longer. But when you're talking about environmental issues and future generations, it's not so much a matter of time. It's a matter of if, and it will come out. And so you've got these circuit boards that were just discussed. They leach really readily. Glass cathode ray tubes, a little less so. But mercury would be almost instantaneously going into the environment and becoming biologically available. So then your last containment is the landfill itself, and we all know that landfills leak. Even the ones that are lined and sealed will leak eventually. Mm-hmm. So you don't really have much containment once it's gone into a landfill. And when you have things like mercury, cadmium, etc., that are in these electronic products, you're going to have real problems even at the landfill level.
But this has been going on for a long time. I guess I should ask how long it's been going. I'm just assuming it's been going on for a long time. Did it start really becoming a problem when you look back? with the dawn of radio and television, when people started to buy radio sets and then television sets, and then gradually we started buying other electronic equipment? Or did it start recently with things like the switchover from cathode ray low-def TVs to high-def flat screens and the explosion of smartphones?
Exactly. That's exactly right. It's the explosion. It's the levels of consumption that we've never seen on the planet before for any type of consumer product. And there's two things going on, just massive growth where we all want more of these gadgets and we're just awash in them now. And things that never used to be electronic, like greeting cards or golf clubs, or it was in Japan and they had electronic toilets over there. So almost everything now is becoming electronic. So we see this amazing growth in this type of hardware. And at the same time, we're seeing really rapid rates of obsolescence. So in the old days, our televisions used to last 20 years. Those cathode ray tubes would go and go and go. We wouldn't be replacing a television that quickly. Now we replace computers every 2 years, cell phones less than 1 year sometimes. So we're seeing a huge churn of hardware. So those two things combined have created this massive mountain of consumer waste. And it wouldn't be such a disaster, except that, as we've just mentioned, it's toxic waste. So we have 50 million metric tons per annum on the planet of this material that's very toxic, needing to go somewhere.
Shannon.
And Mike, just to put some numbers around that as well, today the average American owns 24 electronic products per household. And so to get to your question...
And they would be things like television, telephones, smartphones, landline telephones, smartphones, what else? iPads.
Microwaves.
Microwaves.
Right, coffee makers. I mean, the list is on everything that has a light on when you go to bed at night, essentially.
So all those charging blocks, bricks.
Sure.
They're electric. And you said something I'd never even considered, Jim, and that is greeting cards. We now get these greeting cards. When you open them, they say something or they play music or... That's a concern? You can't just toss those in the trash?
Well, now there's a little circuit board in there. And that little circuit board has leaded solder on it. And so you think one little inch circuit board is not going to bother anybody. Multiply that times many millions that are sold.
So what do we do with those things?
You have an issue.
Do we tear the card up and take the little circuit board out and the battery that is on the circuit board?
Don't buy it.
Don't buy it.
Don't
well, that
buy
was
it.
Going to be my next question. Is it easier for consumers to recycle the stuff that they have, or would it actually be easier and healthier if manufacturers found different materials to put in these products so we wouldn't have to be so concerned about them at the end of their life cycle?
Well, of course, that's the ultimate end game, is placing responsibility back on the manufacturers to make products that can be easily recycled when they do reach obsolescence and upgradable. I just saw an article the other day that Google is making what they hope is the last cell phone you'll ever buy, because it's completely set of components, and you can swap out the camera, you can swap out the screen, you can swap out the hard drive, the memory.
But really, is that helping? Because when you swap out the camera, you're tossing the old camera. When you swap out the screen, you're tossing the old screen. What's the difference in just tossing the whole thing as opposed to doing it piece by piece by piece?
Well, the difference is the impact, honestly, on the recycler.
Okay.
Because if I take one of these new tablets, I won't pick on any manufacturer,
okay, yeah,
where everything is completely sealed. We were talking off the air that you can't even get to the hard drive. You can't get to the battery. So the easiest way to manage that is to just destroy the whole thing. And so separating out glass from circuit board, from battery, from copper, from different components, which is what a recycler wants to do, so that all those materials go to the right streams, you can't even separate them.
Wow.
And so if you can pull the components apart, if I can pull a hard drive out that has certain materials, and the separate materials can all go to the proper end destination.
We were talking about these sealed tablets, and I think all of them are sealed. I don't think you can really take apart any of these tablets. I don't care who makes them. And a lot of cell phones, you can't even remove the battery. So when you take these to a recycler in North Carolina, mm-hmm, many of them go to your company, because that's what your company does. It recycles these materials. Is that correct?
Correct, yes.
So when you get a sealed unit, What do you just do? You smash it with a hammer? What do you do to it?
No, I mean, we
lots of hammers.
Right. No, we save the hammers for other things. But everything can be taken apart. It's a function of the efficiency, effectiveness,
and to avoid the warranty.
Yes. At that point, it's definitely void. Yes, but it's not usable. You may have a perfectly functioning tablet, but the battery is just absolutely dead.
Right.
So now you have a tablet that somebody could use if we could just replace the battery.
Right.
But when we crack that thing open, it's done.
It's done.
You're not going to put it back together. And when we recycle them, yes, we can take them all apart and we can get to the components. But from an efficiency, from a cost-effective standpoint, it just becomes a difficult proposition.
So as conversations, Jim, about this problem, the fact that these things are sealed, it's a perfectly good unit, but the battery is not chargeable anymore, or maybe something's gone snafu with one part of the circuitry that if you could just get to the circuit board and replace that circuit, are you in conversations with manufacturers to make these things modular, essentially?
Well, modular and recyclability is one thing. And all of this comes under the name of green design. And green design, as you said, Mike, earlier, is also not putting toxic products in there to begin with, because they're going to eventually become waste at some point. So you don't put toxic inputs. But we couldn't get the manufacturer's attention about this issue, honestly, until we started shining a spotlight on some of the horror stories around the world of what was happening with their electronic materials at end of life, going to China, going to Africa, et cetera, and showing people what was really going on, even with so-called recycling. It wasn't until we did that when they started saying, oh, my God, we probably have to start getting the mercury out, the lead out, et cetera. Now, today, for example, Apple has a huge announcement of how they're becoming very green, for example, and that they're working really hard to get the toxics out at the front end. They're working on more durability, et cetera. But Apple, as you know, is one of the biggest culprits in terms of gluing down their batteries and making things very unrecyclable, unrepairable. So they have a long way to go, but we have finally gotten their attention, but it took showing real horror stories around the world before that happened.
Yeah, Apple announced, I think, in the paper this morning that they will now recycle all of their products. You just take it to an Apple store and they'll take it back, and in some cases I believe they pay you. I'm not sure about that part of it, but I know they'll take it back.
Yeah, I think they said they do that. But realize they're not necessarily going to fix it. They're going to throw it into a shredder, have someone throw it into a shredder for them. So the ideal would be to have a greener design, which is not only toxic-free, but is totally recyclable, very long-lasting to begin with, and when you do want to make changes, upgradable.
We're talking about e-waste, very high-tech trash, and we'll continue our conversation. I want to get into some of the things that you discovered about where these recycled electronics have been going in the past, because it's a pretty frightening story that you have to tell, Jim, and we'll talk about whether things have improved since you first uncovered some of those stories. Jim Puckett's with us. He's the executive director of the Basel Action Network. Shannon Binns is founder and executive director of Sustain Charlotte. And Brett Reinhart is vice president of eCycle Secure. They repurpose old IT equipment and get rid of the rest in a responsible manner. We're coming right back. Charlotte Talks on WFAE.
Support for this Earth Day edition of Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and the law firm Horak Tally, helping individuals and businesses find sharp solutions to their legal needs for more than 80 years. Details at horaktally.com. And Community Blood Center of the Carolinas. Local businesses and religious organizations are needed to host springtime blood drives. CBCC relies on blood donors to meet the needs of 27 local hospitals. CBCC.us. Tomorrow on Charlotte Talks, lowering the stress level for social workers, especially child welfare workers, would not only improve their job conditions, but result in raising the quality of care for their constituents. We'll hear about local efforts with DSS to do just that when Charlotte Talks. Tomorrow at 9 on 90.7 WFAE.
Oh. On the next Diane Rehm Show, super PACs can raise and spend unlimited amounts of money to advocate for or against political candidates. A growing number are controlled by a single wealthy donor. How super PACs are changing campaign strategies and why they could affect election results.
The Diane Rehm Show from 10 to noon on 90.7 WFAE.
It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. On this Earth Day, we're talking about e-waste and recycling of electronic waste, which is becoming an increasing problem in this country and around the world. Sustain Charlotte's 2015 Awards and Earth Day celebration is tonight from 5:30 to 8:30 at the historic Palmer Building on East 7th Street. Goodwill Industries of the Southern Piedmont will be there collecting and safely recycling your old electronic devices, computers, cell phones, chargers, gaming systems, rechargeable batteries, you name it. You can get details about that on our website, wfae.org/charlottetalks, or at sustaincharlotte.org. So let's get back to our conversation, which we recorded last year. I mentioned at the very beginning that North Carolina has outlawed disposal of electronics in landfills. What kind of an impact has that had? Has it worked, first of all?
Absolutely. This is the start of what's called extended producer responsibility programs, and it starts with a landfill ban. And it says you can't put your TVs, and there's a very specific list.
How do they know that I don't toss it in my big rollout bin? If I have a little 9-inch black and white television or color TV or whatever, or an old computer monitor, how do they know?
Well, if you throw it in your roll-off on the curb, it's probably not going to be noticed.
Okay.
Can I
put it in my recycling bin?
No.
No. You have to take it someplace.
Right. And Mecklenburg County, actually all of the counties around Charlotte in North and South Carolina, all have active drop-off programs open minimum 9 to 5 Monday through Friday, most of them on the weekends.
Will stores where you can buy computers, and I'm going to mention some names, like Best Buy or Office Depot or...
Yes.
They will take them, Kmart...
I don't know. I know your Best Buy's, Staples, those places.
So even if you didn't buy it there, you can take it back there and they'll handle it for you?
They do have programs, yes. And now they're all a little different. Some of them it's free. Some of them they may charge a small fee, but they give you a coupon for the same value. And so I can't speak to the specifics, but essentially it's free.
And how many states other than North Carolina have banned electronic waste disposal in landfills?
There are active programs in, I believe, 25 states right now. That have got some sort of program in place.
So I guess the question becomes, the million-dollar question, is what happens to the stuff you take to these retailers or the stuff that you take to Mecklenburg County Recycling for that purpose? What happens to it?
Well, in the case of Mecklenburg County, I know they have an agreement or a contract with an electronics recycler like eCycle Secure. It's not eCycle Secure, to my understanding, but it's a similar type of company. So we definitely know where that goes. In the case of Goodwill, they have a partnership with Dell. So Dell takes the electronics from the Goodwill collection centers. Okay. So it sort of depends on who's collecting it.
The latest figures I have are from 2006 to 2008, and in that time frame, Mecklenburg County recycling efforts, I'm told, recovered 400 tons of electronic waste and generated $20,000 in revenue. That seems a tiny amount for all that effort. What's the cost versus return ratio? Is there a benefit ratio to this that's more than $20,000?
Well, the benefit ratio is we're keeping it out of the landfill, and we are we're avoiding that toxic downside in the future. So that's the cost benefit analysis there. But from an economic standpoint, before the landfill bans went into place, everybody threw their TVs in the landfill,
right,
with all that weight. Now, 80 to 85% of the material that comes through those county collection programs, comes out of households and small businesses, is televisions. And they are enormous, they're heavy, and they are very, very expensive to process. It's absolutely 100% negative. When a TV comes into a recycler, it's a negative cost proposition. It's going to cost them money. On the other side, if you get a computer, there's enough innate value in the raw material to cover the cost of handling.
So one offsets the other, and that's why the figure is low.
No, the TVs severely outweigh the cost.
Okay.
In many cases, counties are lucky if it's a free service. Depending on the mix of material, they may get charged. They may get paid.
We pay for tire. You get new tires on your car, and they charge you a tire disposal fee because the county wants to be paid for doing whatever they do to those tires.
Correct.
Why don't they charge an electronic recycling fee? Is it because they want to encourage people to use the recycling?
Well, as I understand it, your political show was last week, so I won't get into the politics of it. And that's about 99.5% of why we don't have what's called an advanced recycling fee here.
Okay. According to the EPA, go ahead, Jim. Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm sitting here squirming in my seat because I hate to be the dark cloud over this type of legislation, but there is definitely a less rosy side of this picture. Because what we've done with these types of legislation is we've diverted things from landfill to recycling, which sounds perfect, right? The only problem is in this country, it's perfectly legal to call your recycling export. Or call your export recycling. And so what we have done is diverted a lot of material from landfill, and the most lucrative thing for a lot of the traders and brokers of this material is to stick it on a container ship and ship it off to China or Africa. And this is where most of this material is actually going that's being diverted from landfills.
And I think that you pointed out in another conversation that states with the best of intentions that have passed these laws cannot control international trade. So they may have great intentions, but unfortunately they go awry because of the companies that they use then take this stuff and put it on a container ship and ship it off.
So here in Washington State, for example, where I live in Seattle, our governor, we passed similar legislation a few years ago. Our governor we put in some language to bar the export and to developing countries of this hazardous material. And she was such a good attorney, she said, I'm sorry, but I have to take this out because it's unconstitutional. But what I'd really like to do is see a federal law banning this type of export. And we are working on such a federal law. We also have a market-based program called eStewards to try to prevent this huge loophole where people can say, oh, we're recycling, but then it goes off to these dumps that are very primitive conditions in China and Africa. And you can come to our website and see the horrific pictures of what really goes on with about 50% to 80% of that material which we divert for so-called recycling.
You told Terry Gross on Fresh Air a couple of years ago that as much as 80% of the material we think we are recycling is sent overseas, goes to China, Nigeria, India, Vietnam, and Pakistan, where very dirty things happen to it. What does happen to it?
Exactly. It's really a cyber age nightmare. If you go there and witness it, and it's getting increasingly hard to go into this one area of China where they're really trying to keep out Westerners and journalists, but it's still there. It's an area called Guiyu in Guangdong province, and it's really the ground zero where most of the American waste is ending up. And I've been there just last year in June, most recent trip, and it's as bad as it ever was. It's getting more volumes, and there's more proliferation of the really dirty operations. Like what you will see there is they will be cooking circuit boards. So women and children, thousands of them in this complex of villages, will be crouched over coal-fired burners, slapping circuit boards onto them, burning off the lead tin solders, breathing that in to extract the chips. And the chips then go into acid baths, which go to other operators that dump the residues right into the river where they're working and breathing very toxic gases, using strong acids to try to get a little bit of gold out of the material.
And you said that you can walk. You
goes
can walk
on day in and day out.
And you said that you can walk down the street in these places and get a headache from the fumes.
Yeah, it just reeks, and the groundwater is completely shot. They have to pipe in groundwater for this whole region, because all of the wells are destroyed.
Worse, I understand that some of the chips that they are extracting from these circuit boards through this hazardous process where they're not giving any breathing apparatus to protect their lungs, but they take these chips, and in many cases, they are resold as new and end up in new components. Now, that is true recycling, but you're not getting what you pay for, right?
Well, that's very frightening because they enter the supply chain, even the military supply chain. So they're very good at counterfeiting chips, and they can mark them as military grade, mark them as brand new, upgrade their capabilities by their designation and markings. But in fact, it's a substandard, very old chip, which may go into a very sensitive application. And the military brass are getting really worried about this because we've outsourced so much of our military supply chain. And a lot of it is coming from this area of China, where they're really good at the cottage industry of counterfeiting chips. So that's where a lot of those chips end up that they remove. The ones that are not so valuable in that regard of, you know, counterfeit, those go into the acid operations I was telling you about, and they try to get a little bit of gold out of them. Highly polluting, horrible for the workers. The children have some of the highest levels of blood found anywhere in the world. And
of what in their blood? Highest levels of what?
Lead.
Okay.
Sorry.
It's okay.
Yeah, and you don't, lead and children do not mix. It's a right. disaster. So that's where mental retardation comes from, et cetera.
So the way this is...
That's China. And then in Africa, you have similar sad situations in West Africa, which we've observed, where some of the orphans, the kids with no families whatsoever, this is the work they do, is burning plastic to liberate the copper. And you can see this in the slums of Ghana, for example.
You know, Mike, this is Brett. As a recycler, we as an industry owe a great debt to Jim and the whole Basel Action Network team for bringing this to light. He mentioned the E-Steward certification program. There are other certification programs, the R2 program. There are ISO standards that many recyclers have, and because of the light that they shone on what was happening overseas, there grew an awareness. And now there are, again, competing certification programs out there. And one of the great things that came from this information and from the expansion of the certification programs is a light shone on the entire industry. We've been in the business for almost 20 years, and for most of that time, everything was a secret. Nobody talked about where your material went. You thought everything you did was a trade secret. Mm-hmm. Well, thanks to having this light shone on the entire industry, having standards in place that require disclosure, that breed transparency, we've all realized that there's only a couple of places where glass can go legally and be properly processed. There's only a couple of places you can legally and properly send your batteries. And there's really not so much trade secrets. Now, pricing and relationships, of course, but...
Well, it seems to me that one of the reasons that this material goes to Africa and China and other places like that, these poor countries where people will work for practically nothing just to have a job so they can put some food on the table, is for precisely that reason. It doesn't cost a lot. It's the same reason textile manufacturing went overseas and other things. So how do you do it? How do we do it here with people who are responsible, with companies that, like yours, have been certified as following the right practices and being responsible companies? How can people afford to do it this way when the other option is available?
Sure, sure. Well, there's two sides to that conversation. One is the commercial side. If you're a corporation, you need to evaluate what is the value of doing it properly. What is the liability of just dropping it off to whoever will take it for free? And the liability is expansive. It's environmental. It's regulatory. It's public perception. If you don't do it right, you can have astronomical financial and public perception downside.
Now, it's clear that taking a plastic circuit board and smelting it in a wok over an open fire by a 7-year-old is a very, very, very bad thing.
Yes.
How do you do it? Because you still have to melt the plastic to retrieve the good stuff and the bad stuff. And the fumes from that plastic have to go someplace, and the residue from that melted plastic and all the stuff that you have to acid wash, et cetera, has to go somewhere. So how is it done responsibly? How is it better for the environment? Obviously better for the 8-year-old, but how is it better for the environment?
That's a great question.
Yep, and that's it. It's where is it processed? How is it processed? For our company, we do manual disassembly. meaning old-fashioned screwdrivers and pliers, and we're taking everything apart so that out of our facility we have clean materials. We have clean plastic with no metal in it, with no circuit boards in it. We have circuit boards with no extraneous metal in it, just clean
batteries.
But you
have to melt the solder to do that, right?
No, no, that's all screwdrivers and manual.
You scrape it off?
No, no, we have clean circuit boards, so you've still got the plastic or the fiberglass green board,
right,
and the chips on that.
Okay.
Then from there, it goes to, frankly, it goes to Scandinavia. The largest precious metals recovery operations in the world are in Scandinavia, and they go there, and they have got the facilities, the technology, they've got the certifications, they've got the government regulations and overwatch to make sure it's done properly. So it's not done in...
And when it's done properly...
So, Mike, you're right. There is smelting going on, but there's only, like, half a dozen smelters that really can handle the pollution.
Okay. And when it's
correctly
done properly...
One of them is in Scandinavia, yeah.
What happens to the toxic waste? Because there's waste involved in this. So what happens
to
that material?
I've been to these smelters, maybe Brad has as well, but... the one he's talking about is probably Boliden in Sweden, and there's one in Belgium, and there's one in Canada that's capable of handling this material, but they're extremely careful with pollution controls, and they're filtering out the mercury, they're filtering out the arsenic, they're filtering out the cadmium, and they're collecting it in silos, and it is hazardous waste. It's a very difficult operation, it's a heavy industry. Historically, these places have been a disaster because they didn't care about the lead, the cadmium, the mercury, the arsenic. Now they're much more careful about it. They monitor constantly for dioxin emissions, et cetera, because dioxin is another issue when you're dealing with these plastics and having to smelt those. So they are doing end-of-pipe pollution controls as best you possibly can, but like you say, at the end of the day, metals have to be smelted again to be recycled.
Mm. Speaking of silos, storage silos for things. I read yesterday that there are literally warehouses with millions of tons of nothing but cathode ray picture tube monitors, either computer monitors or old TVs, just sitting there. And some of the companies that opened these warehouses have abandoned them. What's that all about?
Yes, that's it's a
huge.
It's a function of economics in many cases. There are abandoned warehouses here in North Carolina. There's some out on the eastern side of the state, and it comes down to economics. There's a very low entry level to get into electronics recycling. You need to call yourself a recycler and have a pickup truck. And so people get in and they think, they hear that, oh, the manufacturers will pay for all of this, and it's not that simple. Or there's gold in them, and I'll make a whole bunch of money. Then they realize it doesn't work that way, and they walk away from it, and they leave the property owner, typically with a rented warehouse.
Wow. We have to take a break. We'll come back with more of our conversation about e-waste, what you should do with it, what happens to it when you do something, when you think you're being responsible with your e-waste, when we come back. Charlotte Talks on WFAE.
More of our special Earth Day conversation on Charlotte Talks in just a moment here on 90.7 WFAE. Support comes from WFAE members and LRC, Language Resource Center, providing professional interpreters and translators for spoken and sign languages, including document translation, on-site, phone, and video interpreting. Details at languagerc.com. And the Charlotte Symphony, presenting Pink Martini, a rollicking group that blends elements of classical, jazz, world music, and pop. May 1st and 2nd at Belk Theater. Info at charlottesymphony.org. Coming up next at 10 o'clock on the Diane Rehm Show, how super PACs are changing campaign strategies and may affect election results. Super PACs can raise and spend unlimited amounts of money to advocate for or against political candidates. How will they change campaign strategies and election results? That conversation on the Diane Rehm Show at 10 on 90.7 WFAE.
The rich get richer, and that's the saying, right? True in life most times. Not so much true in the National Football League, where all the teams get rich.
Most of the revenue streams that an NFL team gets are shared equally among all teams in the league.
I'm Kai Rizdal. To each team, according to its need. That's next time on Marketplace from 8 p.m.
Marketplace this evening at 6:30 on 90.7 WFAE.
It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about e-waste with Jim Puckett, the executive director of the Basel Action Network, Shannon Binns, the founder and executive director of Sustain Charlotte, and Brett Reinhardt, vice president of eCycle Secure. That's a local company that has been certified as a responsible recycler. Sustain Charlotte's 2015 awards and Earth Day celebration is tonight from 5:30 to 8:30 at the historic Palmer Building on East 7th Street. And Goodwill will be there collecting old devices from attendees. You can get tickets at sustaincharlotte.org, but we also have links to recycling drop-off locations in the Charlotte region on our website at wfae.org/charlottetalks. And let's get back to our conversation, which we recorded last year. Where does Mecklenburg County's e-waste go, Shannon?
Well, as I mentioned earlier, they have a contract with a company. Brett probably knows the name of the company. I don't have it at the tip of my tongue.
It's all right, but it goes to a responsible location.
Right.
Yes, okay. They're a good company.
All right. And you have better numbers than I had a few minutes ago about how much of this e-waste is being recycled.
Yeah, so these numbers are from Mecklenburg County Solid Waste. And in 2006, the county recycled, or recovered, I should say, 179 tons of e-waste. And last year, they recovered 966 tons, so a dramatic increase. And they attribute that to a couple of things, one of which was the passage of the ban on computers and televisions in landfills in North Carolina, which occurred in 2011. So from 2011 to 2012, there was a huge jump in the amount that was recovered. So policy does play an important role, at least it has here in North Carolina.
We've been talking about North Carolina and the United States. Jim, you have this a global view of this problem. Are we the worst offender or just a minor player in all this? Because it's my impression that in Asia, they are gung-ho for the latest gadgets. All the time, things are turning over. Are we the worst offender?
Well, the consumer side, the consumption is happening wherever people can afford to buy. So, and the prices are coming down. So you're absolutely right. Asia is completely wrapped up in the consumer frenzy over electronic products. And Africa's right behind, believe it or not. And they may get secondhand goods, et cetera, but they want it all, and everybody wants it all. So from the consumer side, it's everywhere. From the regulatory side, Europe is far ahead, and the U.S. is way behind. So Europe has instituted extended producer responsibility legislation years ago. They banned the export of hazardous waste years ago. U.S. has not ratified the Basel Convention. It's the only developed country that has not. So we're light years behind, and it's sad because it didn't used to be that way. In the 70s, the U.S. was really environmental leaders globally with legislation, but we've really lagged behind.
Why?
Politics. Look at our Congress. It's dysfunctional. That's a big part of it.
Is it also is part of it the philosophy that the marketplace will take care of it?
Part of that, yes, that came in, and people thought we don't need this regulation. Sadly, we do need regulation. We do also need market strategies. We have to work on everything for the environment. Think about that on this Earth Day. A dysfunctional Congress is destroying this planet, to be honest, and we really have to get our heads around that. And when the Congress doesn't work, we do have to use market strategies, which is why BAN turned to having a certification program, third-party auditors going out to recyclers, making sure they don't export, and that's our e-stewards program that we developed. So we're pushing that mightily, but we haven't totally given up on legislation. We have a bill right now called the Responsible Electronics Recyclers Act, and it's a bill in Congress introduced in the Senate and the House, and right now it's absolutely bipartisan. We actually have more Republican sponsors than Democratic sponsors. And that is a jobs bill. I know we really need to talk about not only are we outsourcing poisons right now to developing world, but we're outsourcing good green jobs, and that should not be. The Basel Convention actually, its mandate is that every country should be self-sufficient and create their own recycling industries. and not dump things around the world and externalize costs that way.
In the break, Shannon, you mentioned that this recycling business is a jobs creator, and you wanted to talk about that. How much of a job creator could this be if we you know, faced the problem head on and took it by the horns?
Yeah, well, we're during the recession. I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I remember reading that during the recession, the recycling industry as a whole was one of the fastest growing industries in North Carolina. So while every other sector was essentially declining in terms of jobs and economic impact, the recycling industry was growing. So there's huge opportunity. You know, Brett mentioned before the show, his company alone here in Charlotte employs 30 people. So you just multiply that by all of the companies that are doing this and all of the companies who aren't yet, because of the amount that we're still sending to the landfill, and it's really a huge opportunity.
And again, according to the EPA, a lot of the waste in e-waste isn't waste at all. That sounds like doublespeak, but what do they mean by that?
Right, and that gets in a little bit to part of the problem with the exporting, because here in the United States, this material is defined as a product until someone decides they're throwing it away. So as long as it's going through the recycling stream, the EPA and federal regulations define this as a product, and products can be exported. And that gets into the problem. Even though we know that the circuit boards may have lead in them and the CRTs have lead in them, they're still defined as a product. And again, until you send it to the wrong place, everything is handled properly. So,
and you mentioned a few minutes ago that a lot of people get into the recycling business thinking they're going to make a lot of money, and they don't really know what it entails, and that in fact they're not going to. Some of these things cost more money than they're going to make to recycle, so they walk away from it.
Right.
And if you are dealing with the company to recycle your stuff, you don't know necessarily what you're dealing with, which is where the certification comes in. Your company, for instance, has been certified as an e-steward.
Correct.
What does that mean? What hoops do you have to jump through to get that certification and to keep that certification? And who polices you to make sure that you're not cutting corners?
Absolutely. And this gets into the larger discussion of transparency. Your point of how do you know where it goes? Ask. As a resident, ask who the recycler is for the county. As a corporation, if you're dealing with someone, ask. And if your recycler is not willing to answer every single question with full transparency, you should be very afraid. Now, back to your question about the certifications. The certifications, especially the more broad ones, e-stewards and R2, are very comprehensive.
And who hands those certifications out?
Third-party auditors. They are not handed out by Jim and his people. They designed the standard.
Mm-hmm.
I actually sat on the board that helped write the R2 standard and was part of the impetus for the e-steward standard to be created. But the actual certification, the audit is done by a third-party group that has no allegiance to anyone. Their job is to go in and make sure that you have everything in place that you have to have. So they don't have any dog in the fight. They give you a thumbs up or a thumbs down, and the inspections that they do are comprehensive. We have independent auditors in our facility for probably 2 to 3 weeks a year. And that's a tremendous amount of time. As anyone who runs a business knows, that you're taking off from doing what you really should be doing
right. To
verify that what you're doing is the right thing.
Shannon.
I'll just add, the reason that I recommended that eCycle Secure be the featured local company today is because when I went to their website, I saw they were an e-steward. And I think they're possibly the only certified e-steward in Charlotte. There's maybe two. But they may be the only one, I can't remember. So I immediately saw that on their website, saw the other two certifications they had as well, and that told me they were doing this legally and the way it should be done.
Let me share some things that have come in through emails and Facebook and things like that. Peggy emails, Happy Earth Day. Don't large electronics manufacturers bear some of the burden here? We've talked a little bit about this. Consumers should demand that electronics be repaired rather than replaced. Most of these things today are designed to be tossed, not to be repaired. We rationalize it because it costs less to replace. It should cost less to repair. What's your response to that?
Absolutely. Again, most of these
things... Find a repair person. It's hard to find.
Right. They are. They are. And if you think about the inkjet printers, when they came out, to go buy the brand new ink,
mm-hmm.
used to be more, or still is, more expensive to buy replacement ink than it is to go down to a discount store and buy a brand new printer.
Yes.
And that is absolutely a horrible thing.
Yes, and that ink. We complain about gasoline prices.
Right.
If we bought that ink by the gallon, we'd go broke. I mean, it's unbelievable. Well, the little ink cartridges that we're talking about, those little ink cartridges and the cartridges of toner.
Yes.
All of the ink and toner companies have these recycling programs. I don't know that when you take a little inkjet cartridge out that people really put them back in the little box and cart them off to Office Depot to have them recycled. But should they? How damaging are they to the environment?
Absolutely they should. They have got the plastics in them. And again, most of these electronics plastics have got brominated fire retardants on them. And the chemicals in the ink and in the toner, they're not great. And you really, Jim, I'm sure, can speak about
you
that.
You won't even be able to find out what they are. We legally can put those on the market, and they're considered proprietary ingredients. So we've tried to analyze them and figure out what's in them. But a lot of these colored inks, for example, you will never know. They're only required to put out a material safety data sheet, but you really don't know what's in there.
Wow. Toby emails, I've always worried about taking TVs and other items that require special handling to Charmec drop-off centers. I once took an old TV to the solid waste drop-off center, asked the attendants where to place it, and they took it from me and threw it onto the general waste pile that was obviously going to be put into the landfill. I find the biggest problem those of us concerned about the environment face is simply the ignorance of sheer laziness of those who don't. When I worked in a corporate office, I was constantly pulling water bottles out of the trash can and placing them into the designated recycle bin, standing right next to the trash. How do you fight ambivalence like that, he wants to know.
I'll let Shannon take that one.
Well, I think that's why, you know, that's a hard one, but I think that's why policy has a very important role to play. A lot of people are adverse to policy, but when you require volunteerism entirely, you only get so far.
Yeah.
For example, Mecklenburg County, because we have voluntary residential recycling, only about 50% of people that live in Mecklenburg County actually recycle, even though it's free and they have their own bin. So, you know, policy has a very important role because some people just simply won't.
See,
won't
how do you explain that? I mean, it seems silly to me that if you have a trash bin and a recycling bin, that it would be easy. I mean,
it is easy
to throw the bottles and cans and.
It baffles me. I don't have an answer to that question. Why someone won't use their recycling bin? It's a hard thing to understand.
I was going to ask you, are people more likely to recycle bottles, cans, and newspapers and things like that than they are to recycle their smartphones?
Well, I think in a lot of cases it comes down to financial incentive. You know, if you look at the materials that are recycled, right, and the one material that is recycled almost 100% are car batteries. And if we ask ourselves, why is that? It's because there's a deposit. And when you return your car battery, you get a good chunk of change back. Likewise with can in states that have can deposits. You return your can, you get a nickel or a dime. For most people, there just has to be some financial incentive or they simply won't go out of their way, and that's just a harsh reality, I'm afraid.
Wow. Now, the Basel Convention, Jim, has specific prohibitions against exporting hazardous electronic wastes in violation of the receiving country's laws. But what I'm hearing you say about some of these receiving countries, like China, like parts of Africa, those laws are extremely weak. So how does it work if we're sending this stuff over there and we're in compliance with that country's laws, but the laws are no good?
Well, that's the way the Basel Convention works, actually, is it protects countries that are poorer and weaker in infrastructure by putting the onus and the burden on the exporting country. So the exporting country is responsible not to export to China because China has an import ban, Vietnam has an import ban, etc. The onus falls on the exporting country. The problem in the case of the United States is we're not part of that game. We're not a party to the Basel Convention, so there's no burden placed on the exporting country. And so we can, with impunity, put stuff on these ships and send them off. And as soon as they get on the high seas, they're illegal traffic for the rest of the world. But from the exporter's side in the U.S., they can do it legally. Once it gets on the ocean, it's considered illegal traffic. And believe it or not, Interpol will start taking interest in it because it has nowhere to go without breaking a law of an importing country. So we're aiding and abetting international trafficking and criminal trafficking of waste in this country just because we're outside of this convention.
Shannon.
I just want to make sure we mention the things that both businesses and residents here in Mecklenburg County can do, because people might be wondering, well, what can I do about this? So both businesses and residents can find vendors that accept e-waste at wipeoutwaste.com. That's a website maintained by Mecklenburg County. There are four drop-off centers that the county maintains throughout Mecklenburg County that accept e-waste, but there's also many more Goodwill drop-offs. So Goodwill, I would imagine, is probably one of the largest residential recovery. So any Goodwill essentially will take that. And speaking about economic benefits, you know, Goodwill then turns around and resells the computers or sells the parts, and that money is then in turn used to employ people and help people in need. So there's another economic benefit when you donate to Goodwill.
One of the things eCycle Secure does, and I think you do this for companies that send off massive numbers of computers that are being replaced, is that you wipe sensitive information from those computers. If I take my old outdated PC or iPad to Goodwill, are they going to wipe it responsibly? Or should I do that before I go? And can you do that to a solid-state device?
Well, absolutely. There are tools out there that will allow you to take some steps as a resident. As a corporation, you should deal with a larger recycler that can do that for you. But there are steps you can take. It all comes down to responsibility. Be responsible for your own data and your products.
Brett Reinhardt is Vice President of eCycle Secure. Shannon Binns, Founder and Executive Director of Sustain Charlotte. And Jim Puckett joined us from Seattle. He's the Executive Director of the Basel Action Network, which I guess we should write our congresspeople and say, ratify their plan.
Convention.
Thank you all for the hour. I appreciate it.
Charlotte Talks with Mike Collins is a production of 90.7 WFAE. Our executive producer is Wendy Herkey. Our producers are Aaron Kiever and Tim Ross. Our associate producer is Alexia Girodi, and the engineer is Joby Sprinkle. For more information about archives, upcoming shows, and podcasts, or to continue the conversation online, visit our website at wfae.org/Charlotte Talks.
Support for this Earth Day edition of Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Parks.